it's state to state. We got your Nittany line update. It's a football discussion with Tom and Justin, so kick back and press play.
With former Penn State and NFL defensive back Justin King, I'm Tom Hanifin. This is State of State. This podcast is presented by BetOnline. All the major sports are in action this week with the college football playoff and bowl season ready to kick off. BetOnline is your number one destination for all your sports wagering info, including news for the NFL, NBA, upcoming fights, and NHL games this season. Head to BetOnline today and remember to use our promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. State of State is presented by BetOnline, where the game starts. Also, State of State is a proud supporter of Blue White Outfitters. Blue White Outfitters was created as a retail shop meant to highlight the confidence, competitiveness, and fearlessness of the elite athletes found throughout the history of Penn State University. Check out the latest Lockdown U and Lawn Boys merchandise today and get ready for the Peach Bowl with Blue White Outfitters, because all sales from Blue White Outfitters directly benefit Penn State student athletes. Visit www.bluewhiteoutfitters.com today. And if you're looking for the perfect beer for Penn State football season, we've still got you covered with the State IPA. Special thanks to our friends at Funk Brewing for creating the best tailgate and game day beer for Nittany Lion fans. A limited supply of the State IPA is still available now. Visit www.funkbrewing.com/beers/state-IPA to learn where and how you can get State IPA before it runs out. Check out the link in the description of this podcast for more information. Must be 21 years or older to purchase. Please drink responsibly. Hi, everyone, and welcome to State of State. Happy holidays. Happy soon-to-be new year as we wind down 2023. Today is National Signing Day. So as this day unfolds, you guys are going to have a lot of information to sift through in terms of new players coming to Penn State in 2024. That'll be very exciting. We are going to touch on that a little bit when this is coming out. It's just the beginning of the day, so much can happen. But a lot has already happened in the last few days, Justin. We did an episode when the initial news, quote unquote, broke a few days ago of Tom Allen being hired by Penn State football. It was made official yesterday. Tom Allen is the new defensive coordinator for Penn State football. Now that it's completely finalized and you've had a chance to kind of hear how things are going within the program, what have you heard? What's the excitement level? How's everybody feeling?
I mean, I think everyone's excited, right? Anytime you get a guy with head coach experience, it's an extreme value add to the program. Whether it's just another perspective, leadership type of situations when things get sticky. I mean, just through talent acquisition, through game plan, and how just the whole organization operates. I think anytime you can have someone that has head coach experience at a Power Five school can be a tremendous benefit. Now, those are just the ancillary traits or value that he brings to the table. On him actually being a defensive coordinator, I mean, that's his wheelhouse, and I think we'll see where he shines there when he gets in with the staff. But I mean, it seems like all systems are go.
Fantastic. And, I want to cycle back to some comments made by James Franklin just a few days ago when new offensive coordinator Andy Kotelnicki was introduced to the media formally, is that James Franklin was acknowledging to the media, he's like, I don't look so great right now. Basically, he was talking about the schedule that exists right now. And like, even though today is National Signing Day, it's not a blip on the radar by any means, but the amount of things happening for this coaching staff, for all coaching staffs, it feels outrageous. And there is so much discussion right now, Justin, about why is this time of year packed the way it is? It could be different. It could be shifted.
It could be, but there's a lot of guys that go like the two. And so there's just the history of the two signing days. Having the early one was because back in the day when guys would get committed to schools, we have schools like Alabama that would come in and just be like, all right, where's everybody going? And just come in and swoop the best players across the country. And then there were good guys that'd be left out on the last signing day and never having a chance to figure out to have a home to go or where to, enroll in school. So it kind of, it helps a little bit of, it helps the prospects and it helps the coaches from the standpoint of programs, from identifying the guys that are actually going to get in the boat and get them to sign the papers that are locked in. And then you can kind of really fill in the gaps that you need to. Now you throw in the transfer portal, NIL, coaching carousel, along with the two different signing days, it gets really bull prep. It gets really, really hectic in just the operation and execution amongst the whole program, because we're talking about critical pieces. Like, transfer portal is critical. Making sure that the NIL and the money that's being given to the players that are coming in and asset allocation is critical. Making sure you sign the right players on the first signing day, guys that have committed, make sure you get that fax in and show them the love that they need to feel when they're coming into the program. That's another thing. But this is why they get paid the big bucks.
That helps. From your perspective, National Signing Day, you know, you're getting recruits straight in from high school. They're going to be a part of the 2024 class. Has National Signing Day been devalued by the transfer portal?
Devalued? Not for the people that are participating in National Signing Day, because...
Of course. I understand that.
I mean, and not, so, not the prospects. Not even the prospects. I think even internally, I think National Signing Day is still a very important piece to the coaching staff, to the program, and making sure that you're still investing 3 to 4 years into these guys of building that relationship and then get them across the line to actually sign that national letter of intent is extremely rewarding. Like, it is it's like an end of a cycle, because now it's the dead period in the recruiting world. So you can't really can't have recruits on campus and do different things like that. But it's interesting where, like, with all these different things going on, I think it makes the national letter of intent, I would say, more dynamic, because I would start to look at college or high school players to start manipulating that national letter of intent the same way that you have transfer portal players coming in, like, all right, what am I going to get? What are the different educational benefits, especially as we enter into this new landscape, the opt-in type of thing, or just a new model that's going to come? That NLI is going to essentially be like that initial contract where you can set yourself up as a player coming in. So I think that is something that we'll see with the national letter of intent that make it a little bit more dynamic, where it's not just going to be a blanketed document for people to see, because I don't think people realize it's not really like a legal document, right? It's just a letter of intent, because in business, you can rip that up. It doesn't really mean much. but guys will start coming to the table with lawyers and things like that and handling that. So I just think the dynamic aspects of college football are going to really start to look more and more like the NFL. And hopefully we have a personnel in place to handle all the different moving pieces.
Well, you talk about, you know, flipping recruits. Look at what Nebraska just did with Dylan Raiola from freaking Georgia. Now, granted, he had Nebraska ties, but still, that is a huge deal. That is a seismic shift within the conference to land a quarterback who has got that much hype. Now, again, is it going to work out? Who knows? It could not work out at all. It could be the greatest quarterback recruitment of all time. We have no idea. It's way too early to know. But still, like, doing that is a big deal. And then even with all the other transfer portal things that are happening around the conference, I sent you something of a report of Cam Ward from Washington State going to visit Ohio State. And the report alleges that in that meeting, Cam Ward asked the Ohio State brass for $1 to $2 million, and allegedly the Ohio State coaches laughed at him. Now, I don't know if any of that is true. However, the dollar amount, $1 million for a quarterback in the transfer portal, that I kind of believe. The rest of it, I don't know if somebody laughed at somebody like that. That could be awful, but it's like, man, there are some huge moves being made right now.
Yeah, and a lot of false information being spread, in the sense of, like, even for a guy to come in and ask for a couple $1 million and for them to laugh at him, I think that shows some validity to this program, like how they're valuing different players. Because I actually believe they did laugh at him, because it's like you're coming to the table.
So, you and I have talked about this, and it's all subjective, but, like, what's reasonable?
I mean, again, it comes to the position. I think if anyone can demand a couple $1 million, it should be a quarterback. But then we're talking about, like, are you worth $2 million? Like, where did you get that number from? Mm-hmm. Right. Cause I mean, it's one thing if you're talking like a Caleb Williams and he's coming in asking for $4, $5, $6, $10 million, or even when they threw out Marvin Harrison, $25 million. So you're kind of seeing, like, that's just not, I mean, Brock Purdy doesn't make that in a year, like $1 million, and he's a professional starting football quarterback in the NFL, right? So I think the whole idea of the value of a player on the field has been misconstrued, especially with like those on three evaluations from like a marketing standpoint. And I just think just historically in college football, everyone's been hyping up the player to like, they should get money. They should have a piece of the pie. Cause there's some nuance to it. I don't think it's black and white. I think the player should be in power. I think the player should be able to earn money. But the one thing that I always said where I would preach to players like, yo, you realize that like I'm coming from a league operations team side. Like you guys don't have that much value individually. Like there's only a few that can kind of pick out and that would be worth money. Like my time recruiting at Penn State, I would say maybe two or three guys. And I'm talking Michael Parsons and Saquon Barkley. That can kind of drive that needle, right? If you're not going out there and developing like a marketing deal, and that's just few far in between. So, I mean, I just think we're off when it comes to just asset allocation and value when it comes to college football players. A lot of people just don't understand what it is, even the internal aspect of college football programs, because that's not a dynamic that they ever need to deal with. That's just more of an NFL type of situation. And that's with the transfer portal and the money that players are associated with is being dictated on. Cause it's not like how many followers do I have on social media? And then that's going to give me my NIL number to this collective. It's like, no, like where are you getting this number? Cause I think that's what's starting to happen where we talk about collectives or teams trying to use their money the right way. They're now starting to question like, okay, I don't believe that this other number that someone else is offering you, like there's a lot of data that's starting to come out where it's like, okay, yeah, we're not paying that. So you're worth this. You're worth that. And like, we can maybe bring some value in different areas and help secure different things, whether it's forever NIL, right? Cause I think if you're going to like a Stanford type of situation, they can offer things that might be more valuable in a value standpoint than an actual hard cash up front. And so I think it's about being creative as possible about providing value and identifying what these players actually want and need. And from there, set up the best package and move forward. But that's, you know, that's, and I'm getting into the weeds a little bit, but that's.
No, it's that, I think it's a fascinating subject. It's the Wild West. It really is.
Yeah, 100%.
We're going to dive in a little bit more to some other news within the conference, because I think that's very important for the future of Penn State and also the players that are in the Peach Bowl that will be in the NFL draft as well, who will not be in the Peach Bowl, who's going to be back next year, a couple roster updates altogether. Just a reminder to like, comment, subscribe, turn on notifications, and don't forget to follow us on Instagram and X at State of State Pod. We will do our best to have all the updates in regards to National Signing Day on those platforms going out through the day today. So there's going to be a lot of news in regard to the present roster for Penn State football and talking about the Peach Bowl. It's, you know, it's a tough time of year now. Obviously, all these things going on, it does change the perception of a bowl game. And we're all looking forward to next year when there's a 12-team playoff. So you know, you just, and there's higher stakes and bigger reasons for players to stick around, those sorts of things. And these games can mean more. I'm personally looking forward to that. But in regard to Penn State's current roster, we know Chop Robinson has opted out of the Peach Bowl. He's declared for the NFL draft. However, Curtis Jacobs, Theo Johnson, and Caden Wallace will play in the Peach Bowl. They have declared for the NFL draft. Players that said they will play in the Peach Bowl, Adisa Isaac, the aforementioned Curtis Jacobs and Theo Johnson, plus Tyler Warren, Daquan Hardy, Hunter Norzad, and Devon Elise. So there's a select group of guys that have some decisions to make. Hunter Norzad doesn't really have a decision to make. He's out of eligibility, so I think it's a good idea for him to play in this game altogether. It just makes sense to boost his stock. But that's a nice bunch of guys that you're keeping for this game, to the point that, no disrespect to Chop Robinson, but it makes you feel a little bit better, at least on the defensive side of the ball, that it's like, oh, you're going to have Deny Dennis Sutton. You're going to have Adisa Isaac, Amin Vanover, provided all these guys are healthy, that is, by the time we get to December 30th. So how do you feel about that those selections by those players, I guess?
Selections like in terms of opting to go to the NFL?
Yeah, their choices. Yeah.
I always respect the players' choices, right? Wherever they're getting their different information. I think the more polarizing decisions haven't been made yet, right? Like, is Day Day Hardy leaving, or is Kalen King? I mean, we should expect Kalen to leave, but I think just some other guys. I think the surprises happen a little bit later. But I like everyone's decision. I mean, I think the football game is one where you have to prioritize getting to the money, not to be cynical about it, but it's 100% entry rate. Things happen fast and you have to approach it like a business. And with these guys doing that, I think they're making the right decisions when it's an opportunity to play at the next level. And especially a lot of these guys that are still trying to play in the game. So it's not like they're saying, I'm going to the NFL and I'm not playing. It's like, no, this is just my last go around here at Penn State. As somebody that took a lot of flack for that leaving as a junior, I definitely understand when it wasn't as popular.
You were very clear to the staff and everybody in the know that you're like, I'm getting my degree in 3 years and I'm going to the NFL. And to your credit, you did that.
Thank you. True story.
You're very welcome. I think that's an important story to reiterate. Tis the season for giving and gathering. And with HelloFresh, it can also be the season of saving. Actually save money this month with fresh recipes delivered cheaper than takeout. And with pre-portioned ingredients, you'll never waste money on excess food. Justin, everybody is trying to save money. It's time for the holidays. I'd rather spend my money on gifts than tons and tons of food.
Save money and time, which we can't get back, right? Especially during the holiday seasons. We'd rather spend time opening up our gifts with our kids and our significant others instead of running to the grocery store fighting people for, I mean, last minute chicken and turkey. I don't know what everyone eats on Christmas, but thanks for HelloFresh for having these, you know, convenient and deliverable services where we can get our grub on.
Yeah, there's no need to fight. Did you know HelloFresh does more than just dinners? From easy breakfasts to start your morning off right to 10-minute lunches or satisfying snacks both adults and kids will love. HelloFresh has tasty choices for every mealtime occasion. And the best part, no grocery store trip required. Go to HelloFresh.com/LionFree and use code LionFree, that's LionFree, for free breakfast for life. One breakfast item per box while subscription is active. That's free breakfast for life at HelloFresh.com/LionFree with code LionFree. That's LionFree. HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Speaking of high-profile players, again, as of this recording, offensive tackle Olu Fashanu has yet to declare for the NFL draft or announce whether or not he is playing in the Peach Bowl. However, it has been said that he will travel with the team to Atlanta. If I am in the camp of Fashanu, I've mispronounced that all year, Olu Fashanu. If I'm in Olu's camp, no way do you play in the Peach Bowl. You declare for the NFL draft whenever you feel like it, but no way do you play in the Peach Bowl. He is maybe the first offensive tackle off the board in the NFL draft of 2024. What do you think?
Have to do it. I think that's the only way. It's a smart move, especially in a position like that. We run the football a lot. Anything can happen. Someone run up here, the back of your ankles to get an Achilles. And he's still a younger prospect. So, I mean, I always liked how he approached the game, even last year when he decided to come back because he was could have been a first round pick.
Could have gone last year. Mm-hmm.
Last year. He's younger prospect. So he's going to go into the NFL as 20 years old. And I think it's cool for him to go down and enjoy the bowl game and be around the guys, whether it's going through practices and doing whatever and just making sure he stays healthy, because James does a great job with treating his better players like they're better players in terms of keeping them healthy, keeping them out of practice, and making sure that their bodies are under control. So from that standpoint, I think that just goes into the culture of Penn State, where we see all these guys continue to play and still want to be around until the end of it. And I think that's tipping your hat to like just the teammates and how they approach this last hurrah before they all kind of go their separate ways.
And specifically in regard to what you're going to see at offensive line, say Olu does not play in the Peach Bowl as well, then you hope to have your three primary interior linemen available in terms of Hunter Norzad, JB Nelson. I think the words that James Franklin said were, we should have him back. We don't necessarily know when that is or next year or whatever, but saying, quote, we should have him back. You still have Vega Iwane in the mix. You still have Sal Wormley in the mix, potentially. Sal has a decision possibly to make. So now it's like, oh, okay, all of a sudden the tackle position in this game in particular is going to be one to watch. And for Drew Aller, you've had arguably the best tackle in football watching your blindside for your entire first season as a starter and last year when you're a freshman. this might be a little bit different. And let's not forget, we have co-offensive coordinators once again for the Peach Bowl.
That's a great point. That's something I did not actually think
Thank
of.
Thank you for saying so. I thought so. That
is a great point. Just that comfortability from a quarterback knowing his blind side is taken care of all year. Because I don't think Olu has given up any sacks all year. So that's something to definitely look out for, whether it's Ole Miss attacking that left tackle spot and just the new players on the offensive line. Because I always preach about the offensive line. It's a unit. And so these guys have to be on a string on how they pick up blitzes and stunts and things of that nature. And when you have an elite offensive tackle, it kind of frees up some of the other guys to kind of double team and do different things of that nature. So what a great opportunity is for a younger lineman to come in against an Ole Miss, see some speed and put some good film out. But it's going to be – now I'm going to really be keen in on Drew and just make sure he doesn't get any or just seeing how he handles that, whether it's like happy feet in the pocket and just – that level of security when you know someone's got your backside and now you're just not sure because a new tackle coming into the game. So great point by you, Tom.
Thank you very much, Justin. I appreciate you saying that. And then on top of that, how do the co-offensive coordinators call formations around that? Because you just don't know exactly how Ole Miss is going to attack that. Obviously, a lot of good athletes on defense, but I don't think it's nearly the defense that Penn State has. It's no disrespect to Ole Miss. Penn State's is one of the top three in the country. Ole Miss has given up points in the past. So it's a question of how are they going to come at Drew Aller? Do they go after the tackle positions? And then does that put some pressure on Juwan Sider and Ty Howell to keep tight ends close, to keep running backs in? Do they change up the formations, et cetera? And then the other thing for Lane Kiffin and company is, again, you're not entirely sure what you're going to get. This is a chance for these coaches to tinker a little bit with the playbook. Not a ton, and you know what that's all about. Like, you're going to keep your base, but as you're kind of trying to figure out, well, who are we going to have, who are we not going to have, you're making changes along the way.
I would actually anticipate an aggressive offense and defensive approach from Penn State in this game, right? Whether it's Ty Howell and Jaywan going quarter to quarter, however they call the plays and game planning. But I would think they would open up the playbook a little bit, to be completely honest, and not necessarily be too concerned. It's going to sound funny, but with protecting Drew. It's like let's see what we can do from the maximum standpoint, going vertical and like stretching this thing out. Because the identity shifted a little bit in that last game against Michigan State, right? With just how they were attacking and moving the ball around, attacking the middle of the field, efficient running game. And so, like with that, I'm expecting an overly aggressive offensive and defensive approach.
We'll see what we get on December 30th. In regard to the rest of the conference, I kind of touched on this earlier, and we were kind of discussing a little bit the Cam Ward situation at Ohio State. Again, that's all just a question of what's out there. One thing that is not a question is what Oregon is doing at quarterback. And if some of you listening be like, this is a Penn State podcast, why are we talking about Oregon? Is because next year, of course, Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA join the Big Ten. And I think it's pretty freaking important that Oregon landed both Oklahoma quarterback Dylan Gabriel and UCLA quarterback Dante Moore in the transfer portal. Dan Lanning and company already put together a very nice season this year with Bo Nix, who was a potential Heisman winner, was a Heisman hopeful, nearly won the damn thing. Now you've got Dylan Gabriel finishing up his eligibility. Dante Moore has a chance to sit behind him. And then if there's an injury, you put in Dante Moore, who is still a raw prospect, has a lot of ability, but was looked at by programs like Miami, Ohio State, Michigan. This seems like a really good situation for what Oregon is doing at quarterback. And it begs the question, does Oregon wind up being the number three team in the Big Ten next year, or does Penn State hold on to its footing?
Well, like they say, you never win games in the off season, but on paper, they are doing a damn good job of picking up quality quarterbacks, even the way they brought in Bo Nix, because he was, I won't say the laughingstock of the SEC, but he wasn't very...
I would say he was inconsistent at Auburn. He flashed. He certainly flashed, but he was inconsistent.
100%. I thought he got a lot of flack down there. And so when he transitioned out to Oregon, for him to be up for a Heisman, it kind of shows that whatever they have going on in their offense, their approach has been beneficial for quarterbacks transitioning in. So to have two of them, I think, is a tremendous value add. And now how they're going to be when they transition to the Big Ten is going to be more of a well-rounded game. But Oregon is definitely a team that I won't say give me angst, but they're going to come in, I think, built similar to Ohio State and just like their team structure, and will come into the Big Ten making some noise next year.
USC and UCLA, I'm not necessarily losing a ton of sleep over. I still think those will be competitive games, but there's been a mass exodus from USC. A lot of guys have hopped in the transfer portal, both sides of the ball. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. The quarterback, Malachi, his last name is blank, escaping me right now, but he is in the portal. He was somebody they were potentially relying on for next season. So it's interesting for USC and UCLA. Washington, all around, was very, very good this year, and obviously they're in the college football playoff. Washington and Oregon are going to make it difficult, and I know there's a lot of Penn State fans who are like, man, yeah, we're just going to go in and we're going to hope to topple Ohio State or Michigan, you know, not playing Michigan next year, but trying to get into that top two. Boy, you better hope you get into the top five in this conference. It's about to change.
Oh, it's going to be deep. I mean, the top four or five teams are going to be essentially juggernauts, like, right? I mean, it's going to, I won't say look like the SEC, but like, talk about the dynamic makeup of teams. Like, it's not going to be one size fits all, whether you have like the USC coming in, spreading it out. UW has a pretty dynamic offensive set. We see what Oregon's been able to do, and we already know what Michigan and Ohio State is. And we're reloading going into next year as well with, you know, the signing day coming up, and let's see what happens in this transfer portal in the offseason. But next year, the Big Ten will be a slaughterhouse, to say the least. I think there's not going to be any dominating teams per se. I think people are going to have some exciting games to watch. And I'm extremely, I'm extremely excited about it coming up.
It's going to be a minefield. Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Because we really don't know what's going to happen. And like, just in terms of not playing these teams and like them coming in, and they are very good programs. Like, right. Like, UW is in the college football playoffs right now. So they're instantly coming, and we see what Oregon is. And it's like high octane type of offenses where you have to have personnel to match up. Like, we always talk about boxers, like, styles make fights. That's what football is in my eyes. It's like matchups, and like, with all these different teams coming in, man, it creates some very unique matchups. I believe football is a one-on-one type of game. It's an individual sport in my eyes, because as long as you beat your man, like, that's how it shows up. And if everybody on the team kind of comes with that level of intensity of like, hey, it's on me, you have championship winning teams. So it's going to be really interesting to see how this whole Big Ten operation comes together next year.
And it begins today. Enjoy National Signing Day. We'll see what happens the rest of the transfer portal. Justin's trying to try not to destroy his office in the process. Like, comment, subscribe, turn on notifications. Let us know in the comments section what you think about the stuff going on with Oregon, how Penn State is going to look next year in the Big Ten, who you want to see Penn State land today on National Signing Day, who you're excited about, who you're not that excited about, all those things. And on top of that, Justin, you're someone who works with these players, these families on a regular basis. Congratulations and best of luck to all the families and all these players that are making huge decisions today, because it really will affect their lives going forward.
100%. It's a 40-year decision. All right. I mean, guys get to live their dreams and get to chase that next leg of the race.
All right. We're going to keep an eye on everything. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and happy holidays. Thank you all so much for joining us. This episode and our entire library of shows is available now on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, and wherever else you get your podcasts. And of course, let us know what you think of the show on Twitter, @TheKing1 and @TomHannafin. State of State is presented by BetOnline.